Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Whole Foods Market brings you meals worth sharing this holiday season. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com/shop for our online menu and ordering system. Local turkeys, inspired sides, and even a little something for your hosts, all available online or in-store at one of our 6 Manhattan locations. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com for more details.
Back here live at Roberta's for another episode of Unfiltered. I'm your host, Brian DeMarco, and we want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Whole Foods. Thank you for representing here out in Bushwick. We appreciate that. I've got in the studio audience with me today Miss Emma Criswell, who is the lovely and talented marketing manager here at Barterhouse Wines, and Mr. Tomas Machado, who is one of our very, very amazing producers of Don Manuel Villafana Winery in Mendoza, Argentina. So welcome to the studio, guys.
Say hello. Thank you.
Emma, get closer to your microphone, Emma.
I'm right here.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, anyway, as we all know, Miss Erin Fitzpatrick is off on her soiree in the North Fork, and she may actually call in after the break, but she's sadly missed here in the studio at this moment. But we do have a show to get on, and so we will do so. Emma, you had mentioned something to me earlier about some sort of pumpkin things happening.
Pumpkin wine.
So tell me what you've read about today.
I've been reading a lot about pumpkin wine. The Daily Sip and Bottle Notes put out a little thing yesterday for Halloween about what to do with your leftover jack-o'-lantern bits. And you can make wine out of it, apparently. It's kind of like the spiced cider sort of deal that you do. You strain it and put it into your bottle, hide it in a closet for a while, and it'll be ready by Thanksgiving.
Well, it's interesting because aren't leftover jack-o'-lanterns, you're supposed to make pumpkin pie out of those?
That too. I almost cut my old roommate's thumb off trying to make a pumpkin pie last year.
Well, that's I'm sure we can save that for another episode. So tell me, I have a lawyer, winemaker, winery owner here with me. What will we do with the pumpkin remnants to make the must, as you would, for a pumpkin pie or pumpkin wine? Like, how would you go about making such a thing, sir?
Yeah, it looks a little difficult, I think, and I cannot guarantee the results.
Well, we've seen a lot of pumpkin beers. You know, there's been a lot of brewers who have taken, you know, pumpkin remnants, and I guess they do the same thing with the fermentation that you would do with anything else. I mean, is that how you would handle it in a wine situation?
Yeah, well, I never saw a pumpkin in a winery, but I imagine that once you make the juice, then you start working on the fermentation, and depending on the sugar of the pumpkin, how that will result.
Right. But I think it would obviously have a very distinct flavor and a very distinct taste. And I wonder, would you think it would be suited to a white wine or a red wine? I
mean, it would look orange for me.
That's why I'm asking. Do you think it's a red or a white wine? I mean, as far as stylistically going, do you think it would have the characteristics, probably more of like a rosé almost?
Yeah, the rosé. I guess it will damage several kind of filters and things that we use in the wineries, including the barrels.
I don't know that it would go in a barrel. But.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, you know, like last month we talked about being Goat-tober, and that how we were trying to promote the edible goat situation here in the States, because I was completely unaware that goat is the most edible and most widely consumed protein in the world, and it's something that we never even consider here. I mean, obviously there's a ton of goat cheeses, and I feel like there's a parody here with the pumpkin, because, you know, as a kid, you know, pumpkin pie was like the only pumpkin thing that even was, or decorating for Halloween. So I feel like there's this huge, you know, pumpkin activity surrounding the 2 or 3 weeks time frame around Halloween and maybe even some Thanksgiving. And then the rest of the year, no one cares. And pumpkin farmers are basically, you know, trapped in this 6 week window of what do we do? And everyone has a pumpkin, and it's almost like a Christmas tree in some regards, where, you know, the timber industry and the Canadians are cashing in for 7 weeks on you know, spruce and pines, and bringing them down for our wanton consumption to put toys under the tree. So it's interesting. I mean, pumpkins, I feel like there's always been brewers doing pumpkin brew, and now they hear about wine. I think it's quite interesting, and so something to keep our eyes out for and something to explore later down the road. Well, what I want to do at this point is introduce you officially, Tomas, and ask you to give us a little bit of your resume without putting everyone to sleep. But the idea is to get a better sense of what you guys are doing in Argentina and how you feel you've been received here in the United States.
Okay, thanks. Well, we are in Mendoza, Argentina. Mendoza is the main producing area of Argentina, like to say California in the U.S. And we built a winery there. We have been planting vineyards for several years, and we are producing several wines, especially Malbecs, which are the flagship of Argentina. In the last years, we introduced the Torrontés as a white, because Argentinian Torrontés are becoming known in the world, are also unique, a very special wine. So we are glad to bring to the U.S. these wines. We have been selling in the U.S. for several years.
So tell me a little bit about, because I want to get into the wines and maybe after the break, because what we're going to do is taste them here in the studio, and then there are a bunch of accolades that are specific to each of the wines you've brought, which we can get into in a minute. But let's talk a little bit about like how you found yourself you're an Argentine native, correct?
Yes.
What are you specifically trained to do? Are you a showman, or are you a lawyer? Are you a doctor, Indian chief?
Well, Indian chief and lawyer. No, I'm a lawyer. I work many years as an attorney on a full-time basis. My family has been in the farming business for centuries. And well, after a while and being tired of so many cases and legal claims, I decided to try to find a more peaceful life. And I started running the wine business.
So how peaceful has that been for you, sir?
Well, after a couple of years, you discover that it's not so peaceful. It's a very demanding industry that requires a lot of work, a lot of investments.
A lot of moving parts, right?
A lot of moving parts. You have to travel and sell the wines and represent the wines all over the world. We are present in most of Latin America, in the U.S., in part of Europe. China nowadays is becoming a very important market. So
with all this demand in the world, and there always seems like there's enough wine to go around. I mean, if I look out and just in the beverage media, or I see what's happening in my home market here, you know, and Emma can talk to this when you look about promotion or people trying to promote a product. There is no, you know, there's so much wine out there. How does someone like, you know, your family or the Don Manuel Villafañe winery, how do they differentiate themselves, not only internationally, but within Mendoza? I think that's really interesting to hear. Like, how are you special in market?
Well, our main concept is quality. The idea is to increase quality every year. And also we try to price our products so everybody can taste them. So it's a relation between quality and price. And after that, it's very important to have service. As an exporter, you know, we have to cross borders, have customs, shipments. Right. So
it truly is an international business, and I think the Argentines have really stepped up to the plate, and differently than say the Australians did. You know, when they became the rage, it was first of all, it was government supported in many ways, and then the wines they did speak to the tastes and the demands of the American public. So how do you think that let's be a macro here, how do you think the Argentines have addressed, you know, the wines? You know, first of all, we could talk about Malbec, obviously, is a juggernaut. And you know, I can speak to importing Malbec from France. I mean, we import wine from Cahors, and you know the wines from Malbec the Malbecs from Cahors tend to be very tannic, have a lot of oak, and an incredible amount of structure. They're becoming more and more accessible as the demand for them are, but typically those wines were called the black wines. They were inky, they were dark, they were teeth stainers. So how do you think Argentina has taken that grape and translated it to be its own, its own thing, one? And two, the second part of the question is, you know, you've almost now are synonymous with Malbec, whereas you know people in the wine business and people who listen to this show obviously know that Malbec is from France, but the general public probably would think Malbec and initially say Argentina. So speak to that a bit.
Yeah, well, French grapes came to Argentina in the 1880s. Which were the years where we received a lot of immigration from Europe. So Malbec, together with Cabernet Sauvignon, Cab Franc, Petit Verdot, several French grapes, also the Italian grapes came at the same time.
Immigration and grapes are hand in hand.
Yeah, they came in the same ship.
Exactly.
And Malbec started growing there. And Malbec became very popular in Mendoza. At those years, we didn't export at all. And the Malbec found its terroir. It's a totally different Malbec from Mendoza than from Cahors, mm-hmm. or from Chile, mm-hmm. or from California. Mm-hmm. And Malbec in Mendoza get the special characteristics that allow us to make it known as a varietal all over the world.
And so you think that Malbec is your flagship?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And our export numbers are showing that. I'm talking about the whole industry.
Of course.
Yeah. And that will continue in that way. And I think that the French, seeing this success of the Argentinian Malbecs, are trying to sell the Cahors Malbecs now.
Well, I mean, they were always trying to sell them, but it was it was I think it was a far smaller niche than they probably wanted, and then they never really saw the potential as you guys have exploited it. So before we get into take our break, I wanted to talk about Torrontés a bit, and then we'll go back into tasting them. But Torrontés, I mean, I've traveled through Argentina and had the luxury of being in Salta, where I think some of the best Torrontés are made. Talk to me a little bit about the grape and then the differentiation between a Salta Torrontés and, say, one from Mendoza.
Okay. Well, the Torrontés is a kind of similar history than the Malbec. It came from Spain originally.
What grape do you think it is most similar to from Spain?
Well, you know, I have been talking with specialists in Salta, and they cannot find where this grape is coming from.
But do you think it's Spanish in origin?
I think, you know, it came from Spain, but
you think it's an Albariño, a Godello, or some sort of hybrid, weird hybrid, or
I think it's a hybrid, because, you know, the grape probably was there for 4 centuries and become something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing is that it's becoming known and popular. Torrontes in Argentina must be from the north, is where they are better.
Is that because of the climate?
It's because of the climate, among other things. In our case, ours come from La Rioja, which is a province in the north. The others, excellent Torrontes, are from Salta, most of them from Cafayate.
Mm-hmm.
And the Torrontes from Mendoza are totally different.
Stylistically, what do you think is there more acidity from the north?
In the north, you have more acidity, more nose. They are more floral, more fresh in the mouth. Once you go to the cold areas like Mendoza, mm-hmm. they are more green or herbaceous. Mm-hmm. It's like more vegetables. And so in our case, even though we are in Mendoza, our vineyards are in Mendoza, Torrontes, we made it in Chilecito, La Rioja, the highlands, that is 1,500 meters over the sea level.
Mm-hmm. So we can gain some altitude and some cooler air at night. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's the way you go. I will say that Torrontes is like Malbec 10 years ago. It's becoming now, and all the time they will be more popular, because it's a very nice wine to have, you know, in the afternoon, before dinner, or with friends.
It's, you know, in New York we would call it, you know, the Stepford housewives drinking Chardonnay at, you know, 5:15. So this is a Mendoza housewife drinking Torrontes at four in the afternoon.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break here for a commercial break. And when we get back, we'll be back with Miss Emma Criswell and our good guest today, Mr. Tomas from Don Manuel Villafaña. All right. Jack, thank you so much for the Thin Lizzy. That's a deep cut indeed. I'm very pleased
by
that.
It was Carlos.
Carlos, you were the man. You're the man. I appreciate that, Carlos. So, like I said, welcome back to your live broadcast of Unfiltered here. I am your host, Brian DeMarco, and sitting in for the absent and desperately missed Aaron Fitzpatrick is Miss Emma Criswell, with our good guest today, Tomas Machado from Don Manuel Villafaña, the winery in question. What do we have in front of us, Emma?
Torrontes. They're 2010 Torrontes. They got, was it 90 or 91 points from Wine Enthusiast?
The Torrontes was 90.
Okay. And it was also in Wine Spectator recently.
This was in Wine Enthusiast.
Yeah.
It's in the top 100 best buy of the year.
Yeah.
What number?
23, and is the first Argentinian wine in the list
ever.
In that magazine, there are only 7 Argentinian wines, and this is the
top.
The top.
You know, Michael Jordan's number was number 23. So, you know, that's we have some good things happening here.
Yeah. I didn't know that one.
Well, that's when he played for the Bulls. But so, all right, this is, you know, when you look at the color of Tarantes, you see, you know, almost like a Sauvignon Blanc in tone. It's a straw color, pale straw.
Exactly. They are light, creamy, strong in the nose, floral.
Mm-hmm. Emma, what kind of aromatics are you getting on this?
Let me smell it. Hang on. I don't know. Every Tarantes is so different. This has like white flower a little bit.
Take me through it, Tomas. Tell me what I'm smelling here.
You need to work in many gardens to pick up this flower.
Yeah, it's for those of you that can't, you know, the theater of the mind here. I'm picking up, you know, some floral notes and some deep, like almost back licorice that you can't even barely perceive. And there's some creaminess and some richness to the wine that belies what you would get it from a Sauvignon Blanc. So it's definitely a richer, more intense flavor than Sauvignon Blanc, but it still has some of those notes. But again, it, you know, importing some crazy wines from all over the world. I mean, it reminds me of almost an Italian white in some regards, with some of the aromatics and some of the smokiness.
Yeah,
do you agree with that?
Yeah, and that's why many people say that this is a great wine for taking before dinner or at breakfast.
Breakfast,
yeah, because it's so aromatic that if you are taking it while you are eating, you may miss the aromas. So,
Tarantes and eggs and hollandaise sauce and okay.
and bacon.
Yeah. All right, I see it. I can see it. Heart attack in the morning. I like that. What else? Speaking to our consumers who are listening in, what should this, Emma, what should this go for retail? About $16, $18 or?
Yeah, I think around there. That'd be something that people typically pick up. There's, you know, the whole pricing structure that people will get the $10 to $15, $20 wines, and then they'll get the more expensive ones that are in the $60 range. But in the middle, it's kind of lagging, but I think, yeah.
I think this you know, is definitely over 13 and definitely under 20. And
exactly.
And then this, so wherever you find it in that price is probably a good value for you. And so again, number 23 Wine and Wine Spectator, 91 points, and a very delicious. And congratulations to you for breaking into the top 25.
I mean, wine enthusiast loves their wines. You have several in there with very high points, and they're very, very complimentary of you.
Yeah, thank you.
It doesn't hurt that they're about 10 blocks from my office, so knock on wood, thanks, guys, for all the support.
Yes, thanks, wine enthusiasts.
For all the support, wine enthusiasts. So let's move on to the Malbec. Is this the base Malbec, or is this the reserve?
No, we have here the Malbec Reserve. This Malbec we made with grapes that come from three different vineyards. These vineyards are at a different altitude over the sea level, so they have different terroirs and different temperatures.
So what's the highest and what percentage of this is coming from the highest area?
Well, it has 30% from a vineyard which is 1,100 meters over the sea level, another 40% from a vineyard which is 950 meters over the sea level, and the balance comes from a vineyard that is at 800 meters over the sea level.
So what do you think? I mean, obviously you're blending for the purposes of creating a consistent and product that your winemaker is happy to put out. So tell me, though, what you think the higher elevation grapes bring to the blend.
Well, the higher elevations, Malbecs will give you more color and structure. However, in the middle, you will have all the aromas and the flavors.
The fruit. So the fruit. 800 meters, you're getting fruit.
Yeah.
And 1,300 meters, you're getting structure and, exactly. And aromatics.
Yeah. So blending these different vineyards, we try to give to the consumer, you know, the best combination.
Emma, tell me about the accolades of this wine.
Oh, what does this one have? The base Malbec has a lot, but does the Reserve? What does the Reserve have? It's been on iWine Review. They enjoyed that one very much. But are there any top points that I don't know about?
This one got 91 points in Wine Enthusiast. Okay. I think was the May number. Okay. The magazine from May.
Oh, May 11.
Yeah, May 11. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So 91 points in Enthusiast. So Robert Parker's. So Jay Miller tasted these wines.
Yeah.
Have you had the luxury of meeting and drinking with Jay Miller?
Not really. I think they probably took it from the market because we didn't know that the ratings were coming. So.
Oh, that's even better.
That's great when that happens.
Yeah, for us it was a wonderful surprise. You know, we were very happy when we saw it in the magazine.
Sometimes that's, I mean, usually when you see something in a magazine, it usually is time to call your PR agent and ask them what's going on. But in this case, you were happily and delightfully surprised, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we are very happy for that.
So I'm giving you my tasting note here. What vintage is this, by the way?
2008.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, this wine has also 1 year in French oak. We use boots, barrels from Alliers in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And those are great barrels. You know,
it's like 1,000 euros a piece, aren't they?
Yeah, they are very expensive.
That's brutal. That's brutal.
Yeah, that's why when you drink with oak, you have to pay the oak. But
to pay the piper.
Yeah, exactly.
But so what do you think that this wine is incredibly suited for food-wise? I mean, to me, my first thoughts are, you know, I can see this as being a very luxurious cheeseburger wine, a wine you have with steak or any sort of, you know, wild animal.
Yeah.
on a stick.
The Argentinians can drink Malbec with everything, you know.
Breakfast.
So I think that's one of the best things of Malbec, you know. Malbec is a wine that can accommodate to many different meals. We eat fish with Malbec also in Argentina, which sounds strange, but we do. Because it's not so, you know, it's not like Cab Sauvignon that you need a steak for that.
Right.
In Malbec, you can have the steak or you can have a chicken or...
I think the tannins and Cabernet, even the Cabernet from Mendoza, from Argentina, is still, it's cutting through fat. Its prime objective is to cut through fat and provide pleasure. Where I think Malbec, if done properly, it has that fruit up front, but it's rounder and has a bit more elegance. And it, again, that's still coming from, there's still some Cahors left in this wine.
Yeah, no doubt.
So tell me what else is on the future for Don Manuel in the winery and what you're hoping to accomplish, you know, while you're here in New York.
Well, for the near future, we planted some years ago Petit Verdot and Cab Franc, which are little in Argentina. And those vineyards are already in production. We have juice in the barrels. We have great expectation from those.
So am I going to see a Bordeaux blend coming from you soon?
Yes, very soon. Sooner than you expect.
That's awesome. Now, what about Malbec? I mean, what about Merlot? Is there going to be a Merlot in the future?
Yeah, we have Merlot. Our Merlot is excellent. We are in a very rocky soil. Our main property used to be a river thousands of years ago, so the Merlot there is incredible. But we normally blend it in our Grand Reserves. We use it with Cab and Malbec, and We used to have a Merlot Reserve, but we discontinued that product because, you know, after the movie in the U.S., nobody wants Merlot. So.
Right, so the sideways is really taken, still has its effect even today.
Yeah, it's exactly. And I will tell you, the Merlot is a great, great
That's absolutely fine. It's a fabulous wine, fabulous grape. So, and then while you're in New York, you know, for your final thoughts, like, what do you want to impart on not only our listeners but New Yorkers who love Malbec and have yet to try yours? Like, what are your hopes and dreams for the wines of Argentina in a macro sense, and specifically, you know, for them trying your wines?
Well, I think that, you know, winter is coming, so time to drink reds. Be prepared. There are good offer of Malbecs from Argentina. Argentina received several investments and technology in the last 15 years. So with the time, you will not notice differences with European wines. But the good difference is the price. So take advantage of that.
And as a final shot, I would say that Torontes for breakfast is the most interesting thing we've talked about today. So I'm very pleased to have that soundbite. Anyway, guys, this is all we have today. Our time is up. I'm getting the signal from our producers, and I want to thank our guest, Tomas Machado, and Miss Emma Criswell for joining us in the studio today.
For the record, by the way, I hate sideways.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
And so this ends another episode of Unfiltered. Take care, guys. Talk to you next week.
Listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.